Good morning. That's what I'm aiming for this morning. Not my words, my opinions, my thoughts, but just to communicate what the elders and what I, in my preparation, feel like God is speaking to us as a community. Also, if you're visiting as well, this is just as much gonna hopefully apply to you. You're gonna hear God through this as well. So let's go for it. Have we got any rugby fans in the room? No? One. Ellen, well done. Two? Couple of rugby fans, is that it? I see it. So shy rugby fans. Okay, interesting. But was that when Ireland's playing? Okay. Well, England have just kicked off. But we'll try and ignore them. We'll try and forget about them. They are going to win the World Cup, so we'll just leave them to it. And we're going to focus on something far more interesting and exciting than that, anyway. Are there any followers of Jesus in the room? Yeah. Okay, I'm glad you guys were actually a lot more bold about following Jesus than supporting rugby. That's good. That's a good start. This is a message for you. This is going to be challenging. If you're here and you're not, you don't consider yourself to be a follower of Jesus. Again, this is also a message for you. There's invitations throughout this message from Jesus to you to become a follower of him. So we're going to explore that. We're going to look into what Jesus is inviting us into, and one of the fundamental things that help us in our following of Jesus. Okay? Are we ready? So we're called Christian Life Center. We're a church. We believe that Jesus of Nazareth, who was a man that existed 2,000 years ago, was, as we just sung, the way, the truth, and the life. What does that even mean? We believe that he is the only way to connect with God, who created all things. So it's kind of a big deal. It's kind of important that we take note of him. We believe that, because he said that. He said that about himself. He said, I am the way, the truth, and life. The only way to God, the Father, is through me. And so then he went and he died, and then he rose again, and then he ascended into heaven to be seated with God the Father. And in that, in that living, dying, rising again, he proved that what he said was true. He demonstrated that he indeed is the only way to connect with God, the only way to connect with the Father. And so that's where we're starting this morning. That's where I'm starting this morning. You know, you might not like it, but actually Jesus' footprint is all over history. And I'd say that's pretty impressive for a guy who was literally just a laborer 2,000 years ago in the Middle East and didn't have Facebook or anything like that. I'd say it's quite impressive that we're still talking about him today. I also just want to let you know that we believe that the Bible is the inspired word of God, which means it was written by men. But actually, as they wrote it, they were inspired. They were prompted by God. And so as a result of that, what we find in the Bible is the best way to know God. It's the best way to hear his voice. It's the best way to understand his plan for our lives. It's the best way to understand his plan for this town of Horsham. It's the best way to understand his plan for the world. And so that's why this morning I'm really hoping just to make a big deal out of Jesus, because he's worth it. And I'm hoping to do so from the Bible. Don't be worried, I don't actually have my Bible here, but I have scriptures on my notes taken from the Bible, and you can check them out, you can check me. And so that's what we're going for this morning. Okay, so at the moment, we are, if you've been with us the last few weeks, or if not, it doesn't change the fact, we are in the middle of a series on discipleship. Hopefully some of you will know what discipleship is by now. But if not, a little recap. Discipleship is what Jesus called following him, okay? It's what, Jesus didn't call it Christianity, okay? Let's get that clear. We call it Christianity now. We're like, oh, I'm a Christian. But actually, Jesus said, come and be my disciple. He didn't say, come and be my Christian or a Christian. And why is it important to distinguish between those two things, discipleship and Christian? Well, I think it's really important because For many people, the word Christian has just become a name. But actually, it's very clear when we interact with Jesus in the Gospels, discipleship is supposed to be our lifestyle. It's not just something we call ourselves. It's something we do, something we are, okay? You might have heard of a term, nominal Christian. Jesus isn't really into that. He's like, you either be a disciple or you don't. There's no middle ground. Okay, there's no by name only. Come and give me a life and I'll show you. It's pretty good. It's a good time. And Danny kicked us off a few weeks ago, and he explored how in one of Jesus' invitation to disciples there and then, there were three aspects, and those are the three defining features of what it is to be a disciple. So in Matthew 4:19, Jesus said, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." It's up there, that's good. And this is the first time I'm preaching with a slideshow, so really pulling out all the stops. But if we get out of sync, forgive me, you know. So follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. And what he is saying in that, and what he was saying to the men that he said that to, but also what he's saying to us this morning, is if you want to be a Christian, if you want to be a disciple, come and follow me. Follow Jesus, number one. Two, come and be transformed by me. And number three, carry on my work in the world. So discipleship is these three things: being with Jesus, becoming like Jesus, and doing what Jesus did. Easy to remember. That's discipleship. That's being a Christian. Okay, we've changed it, but that is what being a Christian is supposed to look like. Okay, it's not just about church on a Sunday morning, maybe, you know, sing half-heartedly along with the songs. Maybe you'll go to a little group in the middle of the week and, you know, see you in heaven kind of thing. It's not what it's about. It's about a whole lot more than that. And Jesus has given us a tool or a method of growing as his disciples, of achieving these things, of being able to spend time with him, being able to be transformed like by him, and being able to do what he did. Jesus has given us a method, and I want to explore that this morning. And we're going to get onto that, and I'm trying to build the suspense, and I'm trying to not say the word and give the game away, even though you might have seen it already. So I'm not going to say it even now. Instead, we're going to take a little turn, and I'm just going to say, I just want to talk quickly, really quickly, about what we're seeing in our culture, like outside the church, like in the West, UK, United States, but also how that is creeping into the church and the way that we do church. And it's this thing called individualism. Anybody aware of that? That's basically like a defining feature of our culture nowadays? Yeah, just me? I'm no social critic commentator, by the way, so this might be not be as impressive as you're hoping, but that doesn't really matter. I'm just going to demonstrate how this is actually really different to what Jesus is calling us into, okay? So this thing, individualism, basically it's like me and my stuff over here and you and your stuff over there, simple terms. And just to demonstrate a little bit better, Kevin, can we stick that video on, please?
Previously on church. This is your first church. This is Creekside First Baptist. I'd say right up front, but I didn't love the name.
The Sunday morning experience is just a little bit too traditional.
Hey guys, how we doing?
Good.
So I know you didn't love the traditional Bible in the last place, okay? But I think this church is really going to do it for you. Yeah. It takes relevance to a whole new level. Behind me, you will see molded clay jar art tapestry canvas mosaic church. Right? So you're
too much.
It was like left there feeling
Bible, but this pastor speaks out in a brand new translation. It's the Tumblr Bible.
I love Tumblr, though.
Lots of emojis, lots of abbreviations. Oh, my goodness. Oh, and how many seats in here? Oh, it is 6,000 altogether. Hey, 6,000. I could be in this worship band. Imagine me up on that jumbotron mid-guitar solo.
Do you know how many Instagram links you get? Oh, my gosh. We find it hard to find a church right now because I grew up Catholic.
I grew up Baptist, so.
So, like, we drink.
Yeah, but you think private. I mean, obviously, you get it. Basically, in terms of, like, worship, I think we're looking for, like, a Jesus culture type thing.
Hillsong, obviously.
Absolutely, the cross. Hillsong's great. Like a Bethel, minus the spontaneous.
Yeah.
Just for me, I connect worship more when the leader is attractive. Personally, I'm a very joke.
Well, she's married.
So is Christian Stanfield.
So one of my personal favorite things about this church is the service times. There's an 8:30, a 10, a 1 o'clock, a 5:30, and even a 7 o'clock service.
Oh, something around like 2?
Yeah, for us, for what we need, 2. How many songs do they do during worship?
Usually five and a half, depending on where the Spirit leads.
Wow.
If that's too much for you, they have a program here called the Worship Assist Program. So if you ever get tired during worship and intern, you can open the door just like that. It still looks super spiritual.
And my arms are so tired from yoga.
Same.
I actually like this church. I think we can make it work.
It was all right. I mean, it was good. And he didn't immediately respond, so we're taking these vessels elsewhere.
Yeah, so that you might find that funny, might have thought that was weird, I don't know, but it highlights a really important point, and not just that worship leaders can be really good looking, Dave. No, we were connecting with Jesus this morning, but you know, thank you. You know, outside of the church, it's rife. This kind of what can I get, and me and my own world. These images, actually, people just scroll through them, Kevin. People consumed with their own little world, and it's usually, you know, you'll see the smartphone has been or the tablet has been removed from the photo, so it looks really ridiculous. But we're consumed with our own little world. Am I right? And this is, you can contain your own little world in this nowadays. And that's it, that's me, I'm set. And we ignore the people that we're actually with. And it's creeping into the church. Because as these guys were saying, you know, every comment that they made, it's like, it's what I want. And that doesn't really work for me, or that does work for me. And actually, do you have a time that would work better for us? Because those four services, they, you know, that's what they were saying. It was like, what can I get? What do I want? That's not what Jesus is calling us into, okay? Actually, if we come into this thing with that kind of attitude, not only are we gonna restrict how much we can grow in Jesus, we're going to restrict how much everybody else can grow as well. Okay, so I really hate to break it to you, but Jesus didn't invite you here this morning only to sort yourself out. Okay, he's interested in that. And he wants to help you, he wants to grow you, he wants to reveal his love to you. He absolutely does. But he's interested in everybody here. And more than that, he's interested in his glory, because ultimately that's the best thing for us. Actually, you know, we can be tempted to think this is like the norm as well. This is, you know, we're so surrounded by it now, me and my little world, you and your little world, that we're like, this is the way it is everywhere. It's not. Actually, only really like Great Britain, the United States, Australia, Canada, the Netherlands, New Zealand, and places like that have been identified as individualistic cultures. Which means pretty much everybody else thinks very differently about this kind of thing to us. And so that's probably why in a place like China or Africa or India, if you turned up to the church service, a lot of people would be there with a very different mindset to a lot of people in the UK. Okay? Actually, Jesus, in his words, he just sounds so different to that. What can we get? The great commandment, Jesus said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. And also, actually, while we're at it, the second is love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. So when you come to church, when you came this morning, what were you expecting? Were you thinking, yeah, this will be good for me, but I'm also going to make it just as good for everybody else? I'm going to give myself into this and hopefully I get something from it, but I'm also going to give myself just as much to everybody else. So what's Jesus' answer to this individualism? It's community. Community has been defined as being people together in a specific locality, people being together in the same place. So an example of a community might be a town, might be a city, might be a village, might be a school, might be a sports team. But I think it's important that we just get one thing straight. People have started to call like social media platforms communities. They've also started to call like online gaming groups communities. That's not what we're talking about today. You can call that a community if you want, but for what Jesus is trying to accomplish in our lives, that won't do it. You know why? Because you're not together. You're not physically with each other. So what that means for us, following Jesus, community can't be a podcast. Community can't be God TV. Community can't be a live stream of a service halfway across the world. Community is when we get together. It's when we're actually with each other. And we'll explore why that's so important in a little while. But okay, hold on a second. You've kind of gone into it really quickly, Tom, and this individualistic stuff and then community. But where is this in the Bible? It's right throughout the Bible. Let me just show you. Several times, in fact, literally throughout the whole of the Bible, we see community. Before it even began, Jesus and God the Father and the Holy Spirit have eternally existed with each other in community. And then when God was realized or decided, actually, I need to reveal myself to this entire world and I need to reveal my plan for redemption to this entire world, he said, I'm going to do it through a community. That's where we find Israel. And then in the Gospels, Jesus comes and Jesus is the revelation of the invisible God. And he doesn't go Lone Ranger, walking around on his own, doing the whole thing on his own. He gets people around him. And he does it. He reveals God to the world and completes this plan for redemption to the world in community. Okay? He had 12 disciples. Are we aware of that? Community. He had many followers, men, women, and we hear about children, you know, all of it. Community. Jesus did it in community. And as we go into the book of Acts, and then later the letters from the founders of the church to the church, we find out that the legacy of Jesus and the legacy of his disciples was an ever-growing number of communities devoted to one another and devoted to God. And you know what? Here we are today, still playing that role, an ever-growing number of communities devoted to God, devoted to one another. That's the plan. That's the plan for us. That's the legacy of Jesus. That's what Jesus is intending for us. Are you with me? Okay. Okay, let's be more specific. Let's get some scripture in there because, you know, you might be worrying that this is all just some thoughts that I've thrown together. But no, scripture actually shows us this as well. Acts 2:42 to 47. If you've been in CLC any length of time, you've probably heard this a few times. And Danny referred to it at the beginning. What did they do? They devoted themselves. What did they devote themselves to? Fellowship, to one another. What else did they do? They broke bread. Thank you. Thanks for the prompt. I'll read it. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, to the prayers. Awe and wonder came upon every soul. Many wonders and signs were being done throughout the apostles, and all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those that were being saved. What did we find in that? Devoted to fellowship. Already said it. The believers were together. So you can't really be together on your own. Yeah. I think we're all agreed on that. They had all things in common. They shared. They enjoyed each other. They shared resources. They attended the temple together. It's kind of why where we get what we're doing today. Like, why do we need to do Sunday mornings? Well, the early church attended the temple together. So here we are attending the Greenway Temple together. No, but you know what I mean. And they were breaking bread in their homes. What does that mean? Could be the Lord's Supper. Could also just be eating a meal. So the early church, they took communion together as a community. They also ate together as a community. Colossians 3. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds together everything together in perfect harmony, and let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which you were indeed called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. What do we learn about community from that? Okay, we start to see here, actually, community is not always fun. It's important for us to realize. Okay, so you might come along to church and think, Christians, they've got to be good people. Or you might actually think the opposite, but let's not go there. You might come along to church and think, Christians, they're going to be good people, aren't they? It's going to be quite nice. And then you decide to go along on a Tuesday night or a Thursday night to a life group, spend a bit more time, and then it's like, okay, I really get on with these people. Let's go for a walk on a Saturday with the life group. And then you start to realize, at the end of the walk, you've gone for a coffee and you've sat down and maybe had a slice of cake, and you start to realize that somebody in the church, in your life group, eats really loudly. Isn't that so annoying? And then it's like, okay, but this has been great, so I can get past that, and I'm sure it was just a one-off, you know? Maybe he was like thirsty or something, or she. And then it happens the next time, you know? The next time you get together, you're having a meal as a life group, and same suspect, eating really loudly. And like gulping the water as well. It's just so annoying. Okay, I'm not going to take that any further because I'll probably get into trouble. But what I'm saying is, we're going to, if we do this, if we commit to each other, if we devote ourselves to one another, at one time or another, we're probably going to get on each other's nerves. Like, we're people, we're imperfect. I'm quite a moody person. And so when we went camping together a few weeks ago, I tried really hard to hide it, but I don't know if you could tell, there was some times when I was just like, I've spent a bit too much time with people now. Yeah, they knew. They were aware. And there was one point, actually, when it was, we'd gotten back from a day at the beach and a walk, and I was exhausted, and I just wanted to, like, take a little nap on the grass in the sun. And Esther, I absolutely love Esther, okay? But she comes along with these fake Oreos from Lidl, and decides that for some reason, really good idea to lick it and put it on Tom's nose. And I was really not happy about it, I can tell you. And mostly that was because I was tired and grumpy and things like that. You don't need to know. Anyway, the point is, like, it's not going to be all sunshine and rainbows and flowers. Sometimes you're going to get an Oreo on your nose and it's going to be sticky. And I now I have to forgive Esther, okay? So I forgive you, Esther. Bear with one another. Be patient with each other. Forgive one another. Whether it's an Oreo or something actually a whole lot more difficult to deal with than that. Teach and admonish one another. You know, we've got the opportunity to point each other to Jesus. We've got an opportunity to help each other understand more about Jesus. We've got an opportunity to just propel one another into the fullness of life that Jesus is calling each and every one of us into. And this is part of that. Encouraging one another, teaching one another, admonishing one another. Admonishing, it's kind of like, let's not like go around and like wag the finger, but it is correction. It is pointing people in the right direction. And there's appropriate ways to do that. There's appropriate situations to do that in. You might not have the relationship with a certain individual in the church to do that. But if you don't have anybody doing that to you, find somebody. Okay, this is where it kicks in. This is where the discipleship starts in community. Okay? But actually, one more, but actually, I feel like I've said that a lot. Jesus' idea of community gets even more specific than that. And actually, this is really helpful because there's so many communities out there that it can just get confusing. Jesus had a really good idea for how the church is to be a community together. And as we were worshiping and the word came forward about sacrifice and about devotion and about irreversibly giving ourselves to Jesus, obviously, but that really fits in with what the call is to us today, okay? The call to us today is to come into community. It's to come into what Jesus calls his family. But that is going to require some sacrifice. That is, and the end, I'm skipping ahead to the end, the response I'm going to call, so prepare yourselves, is to irreversibly give yourselves to this family. And I don't want you to take it lightly. If you don't want to commit to that, don't do it. Okay? Don't just do it because a whole load of people stood up. Only do it if you're really going to do it. Yeah? Okay? So, you know, warning, I guess, that's incoming. So Jesus, how do we know he wants us to be his family? Well, he was in a house and one of the disciples came to him and said, your mother and your brothers are outside. Should probably go and like pay some attention to them. You know, you've been in your hometown for a while and they haven't seen you yet, they want to see you. That wasn't actually in the scripture, that bit, but you know. That's the kind of what was being said to him. And Jesus said, hang on a second, no. No, you've got it wrong. Those aren't my mother and brother, although they are biologically, but the ones who do the will of my Father in heaven, they are my mother, my brother, and my sister. Okay, Jesus is calling us into family. Did you got that from that? That's his call to his disciples, to recognize, come into my family. I see you as family. If you're my disciple, I see you as family. Okay? And the thing about family is, whether you like it or not, we can't choose them. Okay? And you know, you might laugh at that, some of you. That might actually be really difficult for some of you because you've had a difficult family experience. Or that might be great because, you know, your family's so great. And well done, you know? Yeah, you can't choose them. And the same is true when we come into this family. We don't get to say to God, okay, I'm kind of actually really interested, God, in calling you my father and having a relationship with you like that. But these guys, you know, rather not. I never said that about you guys, by the way, just an example. We don't get to choose, okay? If we want to call God our Father, then we need to call the people in this room, the followers of Jesus in this room, brother, sister, mother, father, family, let's go with that, family, because it can sound a bit weird. We need to call each other family, okay? Okay, what does family look like? Okay, we've already established you can't choose them, so what does it look like? What do families do? What does a healthy family do? They eat together, okay? And you know what? They don't sit down on the sofa with their lap tray and watch EastEnders together. They eat together. And they see that as a rare opportunity actually to interact with each other in a busy world when we've got school and we've got clubs and we've got church and whatever else, you know? And they don't, little side note and a little bugbear of mine, they don't sit at the table and, you know, something comes up in conversation over the table and think, you know what, I'll ask Google and get the phone out, okay? Let's leave the phones out of the meal time, okay? We don't need them. They don't add so much. Little bugbear of mine. Just, you know, we're all aware of those people that every 5 minutes it's like, I'm going to Google it, or I've got a message, or something. That's not eating together, okay? That's eating together with all your friends on social media as well, and Google. Okay, so family eats together, what else do? They do life together. Okay, what does that mean? It could mean you go camping with each other and you really learn what winds people up. Could mean that you go for a walk together and you eat coffee and cake and you get over your irritation at people's chewing sounds. It could mean something even more normal than that, like everyday life, doing everyday life together. Let's go shopping together. Okay, I've got to get the groceries. You've got to get the groceries? Let's do it. We're going to do that together. Family. It could mean overlapping. Andrew likes a little bit of overlapping. We were overlapping this week, actually, weren't we? Family, look at that. We got a ton of logs, and they had to be moved from the front of the house to the back of the house. And there's still some there, actually, isn't there? So, I'm going away this week, but if anybody wants to overlap with Andrew, opportunity. Okay, what else do family do? They hold each other to account. Now, I don't know about you, or rather parents, I don't know about you, but my parents actually had a really, really hard time bringing their children up, one in particular. I've got three siblings, but I was the one that was always sat down and, as I just said, held to account. And it was things like, Tom, you're still not doing your homework on time. Do your homework. Or, Tom, how about you start like actually working at work when I was an adult, when I was supposed to be a grown up? Or, Tom, stop wasting your money. And this all actually happened at one time or another. That was the old me. I'm changed. I've slightly improved. But yeah, my poor parents, they had a hard time. They had to sit me down regularly, and I didn't receive it well, okay? Let me tell you that. But we can make each other's lives a whole lot easier by making it easier to hold each other to account. Do you know what I mean? So, what does that look like in church? Because you're not all my mum and dad, so you can't all come and say to me, Tom, you know, stop wasting your money on coffee or whatever it is. If you think I'm spending too much money on coffee, come and tell me. Please don't. But I actually do welcome that, and like I don't have the closest relationship with everybody here, but if you've seen something in my life that you're like, hang on a second, he's way off there, please do come and tell me. Now, not everybody else will be as willing to receive that, but this is how we grow. We point these things out to each other. And so it for most of us, and actually for me, for all of us, it would be best with one individual in a trusting relationship where you know, actually, these things aren't going to go out there. And then you start to deal with more than just the money you spend on coffee and things like that. And if you're not in that place, get there. It's going to take a risk, it's going to take effort, but if you're really serious about this discipleship thing, that's what it takes, okay? It doesn't just happen. We don't just sit around and all of a sudden people are helping us grow. What else do family do? They share resources. The early church, where there was need, they gave generously. And actually, if they didn't immediately have the means to give, then they sold stuff and they gave. That's pretty radical. But that's the kind of family that Jesus wants to establish here. And this is probably where it starts to sound a little bit like a cult. There you go. but actually, you know what? Doing church the proper way more and more is going to start to look like a cult. Okay, that was an outrageous statement. Hold on, Tom. Quantify that. Okay, it's not actually going to look like an actual cult, and that's not what we're about here. But the more alien the church is to the culture, the more people are going to be like, oh, what's going on there? Weird. Weird stuff. And so we might be accused, you know, they hear of somebody who can't afford the bills, and so I go and sell my football card collection, get loads of money for it. I give to that person so that they can pay their bills. My football card collection isn't that good, so I'm not going to get that much money. But, you know, they're going to be like, this is a weird thing. This is alien. And there's going to be suspicion. Sorry. Definitely wasn't planning on seeing that. What else do family do? They share responsibility. Okay, you ever been at home and mum's cooked and dad's been at work all day and earning the money to support the family, and that was stereotyping. Mum's been at work all day, dad's cooked. Open to whichever way you want to do it. And, you know, the one thing you ask of the kids, wash up. So Martin loads a dishwasher and Alex unloads it. Happy family, you know? Yeah? Well done, you guys. Yeah. That's what family does, and it's the same here. We've got a house, it needs to be taken care of. This isn't actually our building. We have got a building. But so that building needs to be taken care of, and also when we come here and we set up, and you know, there's needs throughout the church. There's a responsibility to take throughout the church. And when we realize we're family, we say, I love this family. I love my family. This particular thing might not be something that I like to do, but it needs doing, so I'm gonna do it. And so when in the kids ministry there's not enough leaders, or actually, cry from me, when in the youth ministry there's not enough leaders, and we've got a lot of leaders, but we need more, because we've got 20-something children now, praise the Lord. But when we need more leaders in those things, and you're like, oh, I don't really do kids, not really into that, you say, actually, if you really commit to the family, you say, actually, I could do that. I could do it. I might not thoroughly enjoy it, but, you know. Does that make sense? What else do? We bear one another's burdens. We make decisions together. We release one another into, I like this one, we release one another into the fullness of life. Jesus has a calling. He has an intention, he has a plan, he has a purpose for every single life in this room. And you might begin to scratch the surface by like going for that on your own, but that's, I'm sorry, my conviction is, and what I see in the Bible, you're only going to scratch the surface. What's really going to propel us into that fullness of life is when we get people around us and we say, challenge me, help me, encourage me, do this with me. My friend James, he's away at the moment. He's rocked up in Horsham recently, and it's been great. He is so passionate about sharing Jesus with people that don't know him, Jesus. And for so long I've wanted that, and I wanted to do it, and I wanted to do it well. But I've got fear of man, okay? Being honest with you. So what do I do in this situation? James is really gifted at it. I go out with him and I learn from him. And through that, I begin to operate in the fullness of what Jesus is calling me into, because I know Jesus is calling me to share him with those people that don't know him. He's calling us all to do that. And families are faithful, which means they're loyal to each other, which means they're committed to each other, which means they don't make a habit of saying, sorry guys, no, it's the last minute, but you know, can't do it this week. They don't drop out at the last minute again and again and again, okay? Families are there when we need them, and that's what Jesus is wanting here. People that are dependable, people that are committed, people that are faithful, people that are loyal, people that aren't going to drop out at the last minute again and again and again. And that challenges me because I can be like that sometimes. What have we got up on the screen? Nothing at the moment. Kevin, you want to get those boots up there? There they are. These are my boots. And I polished them for you guys today. They're not actually my boots. Daniel, they'd probably suit you more than me. It's your kind of your style, yeah? Is it? Yeah, you'd wear them? Well done, good job. So I used to be in the cadets, so I did used to wear a pair of boots like that, and I was rubbish at polishing, so they never looked like that. But what was, God spoke to me through this thing that we'd regularly do in the cadets. And what it was we'd, you know, first thing in the morning, the alarm goes, you're out of bed, you're off on some trek, and you're wearing these boots, and you're going through the fields, and the mud, and this and that and the other, and your boots do not look like that. Oh, they do look like that. You're skipping ahead, Kevin. That's fine. They look like that. Your boots look like that after you've done your trek. And then you get back to camp, and they say to you, okay, you've got 15 minutes, then we're gonna be doing parade. Do you know what parade is? It's when you put the smarts on and you have to look your best, and the officers come around and they shout at you. And I don't know why I was in the cadets, it was torture. But yeah, 15 minutes and you're on the parade square, okay? And you need to look good, so polish your boots. Take them from that to that. Thank you, Kevin. Well done, slick. And we would get there, we would be in the parade hall, and we'd stand to attention. All that, you know. I've lost it, I've totally lost it. I used to kind of be able to march and stuff like that and salute, but anyway. We'd do that, and we'd have our boots looking like this, and for 15 minutes we'd get shouted at by the officers, and it would be not fun. And then we'd get sent out on another trek. And am I selling the cadets to anybody? Probably not. And we would, not only would the boots end up looking like this after the next trek, but before we went out, we'd have to make them look like that. Because, you know, if you've got a shiny boot and the sun reflects off it, then you're gonna be fine. That's not camouflaged. And so I'm going somewhere with this, don't worry. You know, polish boots for like half an hour, and then these boots for the rest of the time. And what God said to me through this was, we can be like this in the church. We've been out and about on a trek, on a mission. We didn't used to call it that. I don't know what we used to call it, but yeah, let's call it a mission. All week, and our boots look like that. And then we come to church, and we parade, and we polish them, and we shine them, and we look like that. And then we go out the doors, and immediately the kids get on our nerves, and we have a go at them, or somebody starts eating really loudly, and I, you know. And we look like that again. And you know what? Jesus' call to family isn't a call to be a polished pair of boots. It's a call to be muddy and scratched and beaten and battered and a little bit like that. And not to just come up and say on a Sunday morning, hello, how are you? Hi, I'm good. See you later. But to be real with each other, let's be real with each other, church, you know? I don't know where you're at with this. I think some of us are good. Some of us here are good at, like, I had a conversation with Susie this morning, and she told me a few things that she was struggling with, and that's great. And, you know, you might not do that with everybody, but you're going to be real. You're not just going to put the facade up if it's family. You know, and even in family, you probably, I talked more with my mum than with anybody else about what was really going on, but I still was honest with everybody else. You know, love my mum. Mum gets a shout out. So, we're going to call it a day there. I think we've got the point, though. Hopefully we've got the point. It's actually a really simple message, and I may have overcomplicated it. And if I have, I'm sorry. But the point is, Jesus likes community. Jesus wants this to be a community. In fact, Jesus wants this to be a family. Family grows together. We grow when we're in family. Let's be family. That's it, right? That's the sum up. Let's be family. It's pretty simple, hey? So as I said, we're going to respond to this. But please, don't just do it because everybody else is doing it. Don't just do it because you kind of feel pressure. Do it because you genuinely want to commit to this family and commit to growing with this family. And so what I want us to do as a response, you're going to stop playing. Yeah, let's stop playing. Let's do that. Always, you know, atmosphere. What I want us to do by way of response is commit to this family. But not just to think in my mind I'm committed. I'm going to invite you actually to physically respond. And we're going to, if you want to be a part of this family, if you want to commit to this family, if you want to commit to this community and commit to growing together in this community, come and join your family at the front and stand together. Now. And you know, you can wrap an arm around somebody appropriately and just physically demonstrate that we are together in this. If you want to hold hands, you can. Yeah. I'm with you guys. I'm standing with you in this. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. In Romans chapter 12, which is a book of the Bible which Paul wrote as a letter to a church in Rome. And before chapter 12, what Paul did was he went into just the greatest detail of the goodness of God and the glory of God and what God has done in creating this world and what we've done in rejecting God, in sinning. And then what God did in Jesus accomplishing forgiveness of sins by dying for us and rising again. That's Romans 1 to 11 in summation. Read it yourself, it's amazing. And then in Romans 12 he says, I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, which I've just explored with you, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. This is your spiritual worship. He says, do not be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you will be able to know what is the will of God, what is good, what is acceptable, what is perfect. And so there's a call for us today, brothers and sisters, and that's I'm Tom calling you brothers and sisters. Present yourselves. Present your bodies. Present your whole lives as living sacrifices. Don't be conformed to this world. Don't be conformed to the way that the world does it on their own. But be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Come, be family. Come, let's grow together. And as we do so, we'll be able to learn what is God's will for ourselves, for each other, for this town, and even further than that. And we'll be able to test it. We'll be able to know what is good and acceptable and perfect. We'll be able to know what's pleasing to God. What's pleasing to God? You know, who created heaven, earth, the universe, who sustains it every day, who rules it. And then Paul goes on and says, later on in chapter 12, let this be what defines you as people of God. Let this be what it looks like. Let this be what you are known by. And he says this. Let love be genuine. Not polished, but muddy and scratched and bumped and bruised. Let love be genuine. Abhor, hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Love one another as family. Love one another as brothers and sisters. And I know you young guys might not actually always feel a lot of love for brothers and sisters, but I know deep down, I know what that's like. I used to fight with my brother, but I know deep down there is love under that. Because I used to fight with my brother, but I love him so much. So let love be genuine, hate what is evil, love one another with brotherly affection. This is good. This one's good. Outdo one another in showing honor. You know, the only time we're told in the Bible to outdo each other is here. So we're not supposed to outdo one another in being right or being the quickest to Google the answer or, you know, having the most steps on Fitbit or, what we're supposed to do, we're supposed to compete with each other in showing honor to one another. You know what that means? It means I go ahead of you and I show you honor and I love you and I give my life to you. And I say, you're my family and you're worth this. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. We're having lunch at Roger and Leslie Ann's. Talk to them. Sorry guys, I've just set you up for that. But you know, opportunity to show hospitality. And this is what we should look like. Family. Loving one another, outdoing one another, and serving one another, and showing each other honor. We don't do it on our own. We don't compete to be the person that preaches, or the person that prophesies, or the person that leads worship, or any of that. We serve in the kids' work where nobody sees, or we get the toilet brush out and scrub the toilet when nobody sees, or change the loo roll. Or too much toilet, sorry. So do you want to respond to that? Do you want to be like that, church? Those of you that have stood up? Good, thank you. Don't be like the foolish man who built his house upon the sand, because what he did was he heard Jesus' word and he didn't do it. Be like the wise man who built his house upon the rock, who heard Jesus' word and he went and he did it. And because he'd done it, and because By doing so, he built on firm foundations. When the storm came, his house stood firm. And you know what? If we do this, if we look like what I just read, like if we look like disciples, if we look like family, when the storm comes, and it might, in fact, it probably will, Christian Life Center will stand firm. So, just for 30 seconds, just with one of the people that you're next to, and I mean, you know, you pray for 15 seconds, they pray for 15 seconds. Thank God for your family and for that person in particular. And ask God to help you to commit to one another in family. And then we will respond with a song.